Vision Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is March 12th, 2018. I hope you had a good weekend, and I hope that you did something to acknowledge 7 years of an unstoppable nuclear mess going on in Fukushima. And I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank our affiliate in KEPW. .org here in Eugene, Oregon, an FM station that plays our radio shows. Really appreciate that. We appreciate your listenership. Let's get right to the show. I have a guest with us that I have wanted on for a long time. It's a very good friend of mine. Her name is Louisa Hamacek, and she is a naturalist in the Northwest, and she teaches children about the watershed. She gives geography workshops to children about the watersheds, which is a pretty critical idea. And to be honest, she's a very knowledgeable anti-nuke activist here on the West Coast. So thank you, Louisa, for joining us.
Yeah.
It was really awesome. We actually did an action yesterday at a camp at a Cape Perpetua, and we went out, Kevin Finnegan, Jerome Hebert, and myself, we went to the statue. We met up with Heidi Lambert and her two children and her husband. We did posted some videos that will be going up today on my YouTube channel today. And we basically said prayers and talked about shared the knowledge that we all had about realizing that this nuclear catastrophe is all around us and we're not really being warned. Then we went up to Cape Perpetua. We went down to Newport Beach, to the beach. Newport, it's called Neptune Beach North. We went to that site. It was really shocking. We were out there at low tide. We saw barely no animal life or wildlife out on the rocks. It kind of shocked me. There was no sea anemones. We found one, I think Kevin Finnegan found one or two starfish at the top of a rock. Pretty much desolate. I was stunned. And I think it's coming from the contaminated ocean that we cannot sustain life up here. But thanks, Louisa, for joining us. I mean, we met Louisa at the top of Cape Perpetua. We went up to the very tippy top to look, and lo and behold, there was Louisa up at the top. She was had planned on meeting us earlier, and we met her at the tippy top. So it was a pretty magical event the whole day. So thanks for joining us, Louisa.
Yeah, that was a beautiful day.
Yeah. So look, first off, I'd like to get your take on, I guess the question is really, you've been an anti-nuke activist for a long time, like quite a while. You're the first person that told me about Hanford. I think it was in 2008. I had never even heard of it, right? And, you know, you've been doing this a long time. Why do you think that people just check out? Like, they just can't handle talking about it?
Well, I do think the idea that most of the nuclear information was connected to the nuclear bomb, and that we were not to be Russian spies. We were not to indulge in investigating or interrogating our government. That would be unpatriotic, really. So for a long time, people, like, there's a kind of an aura about an anti-nuclear activist that they're like pawns of the Russians or something, that they're and that I think a lot of redneck guys I indulge in conversation with are afraid to even talk with me sometimes, or maybe not the guys but their wives of the older generation feel like they don't want to even be seen talking with me. So there's this feeling of unpatrioticness if you investigate or if you question the government about this. I think
that's actually true. There is a sense of, like, you're questioning the official story.
Yeah, and like you're trying to break apart America and destroy this country's government. And so it's kind of hard to go against that if you do like America. It's hard to complain, because we've been told don't investigate. We're not allowed to go to these sites. We're not allowed in. We're not allowed to find out everything. And all they have to do at most of them is say it's a military installation. And we go, oh, yeah. Because we don't want to end up in Guantanamo and stuff, too. It kind of, from also the point of view of about 20 years ago on, it was un-American. And then, like, when Guantanamo started happening, and then the various women's prisons and different things, and the Earth First movement in the country, and then in this Northwest, had young people going to prison, and they for protesting the tree chopping and stuff, and that was shocking and surprising when some people were getting put right into prison, and it really did quiet down a lot of the direct activism. And when it comes to nuclear, we're talking nuclear bombs and strategic stuff, and we grew up with Mission Impossible and spy versus spy, and that it's kind of at least I did. I'm in my 60s, and it was considered, it was, you know, like in Mad Magazine, they had spy versus spy comics, because it was what was always being talked about is Russian infiltration or Soviet infiltration, and
isn't that kind of ironic
information
today?
So
I guess like, mean, here we the president with all of his people infiltrated by Russia. And nobody cares. It's kind of like the nuclear thing, Louisa. Nobody cares. I mean, right before we got on the air, I asked you specifically, is there anything you want to talk about? And you wanted to talk about the Fernald Reserve. Fernald is Fernald, Ohio, right? This was a nuclear processing plant. Do you know they've turned it into a wildlife preserve? The latest story on it says 2014.
So did they do with Hanford? If you try to go see Hanford from the North Gate, like, I went with my canoe, and I said, I want to go down there. But because they'd seen me at two other gates in the 2 days before that, on their little monitors and stuff, and they kept track of my license plate or something. And so I was banned from being anywhere near the area for that time, and I was turned away. But I said, But I see on the map right here that there is a wildlife preserve surrounding Hanford, and I want to go see what the wildlife's like. And I have my canoe, and I want to come with the university's Geiger counter, which they didn't want to come. And so they gave me that to come and take some readings of the water near here. And it's a national wildlife preserve you've created down here, so I should be able to go there. But they said no. But so they make these insulation things of wildlife preserves, and that gives people the sense that it's beautiful. Yeah. And they won't tell people up at Hanford that it is there's people that are local, like at gas station around there one time at dawn or something, and I was going there. I go there pretty much also, speaking of Fukushima, just in my own personal ceremony that has also been activism. I go to Richland, the city that's 10 miles downstream of the Hanford site, and also where the Columbia Generating Station is still operating, and it's on a fault line or 10,000.
Built with the identical nuclear facilities that was built in Fukushima, the identical plants.
Right.
Are in Richland. The same setup, where the rods are standing up in the air. Everything about Columbia Generating Station is identical to Fukushima.
Yeah, and what I find frightening about it, I used to, well, most of the time, I think in terms of watersheds, I draw watershed maps. I love to teach kids to be stewards of their stream watershed, and then that expands to their to the river it pours into that's near them. And then that goes from there to the sea, usually to another river, and then, excuse me, and just a minute, my good old doggy is after a critter. No, it's all right. She might start screaming, so sorry. She likes to go after mice. Anyways.
okay. Louise is on a farm, I might admit, to let you guys know. She stays up on a farm, so there are mice there. Okay.
But people were going out early in the morning, back returning to when I was recently around the Hanford site. And I go there to engage people who are local and to ask them pertinent questions and to be their friend and to find out and see how far they can go to be my friend if I let them know. And I hand them a map that I've drawn because I'm a map maker of watersheds, and I started it with this workshop that I do with kids where I simplify their watershed so they don't have to see all the roads and all those things, but get back to maps like Lewis and Clark and everybody of the pioneers would have wanted very much, which was how the rivers flow. And we all connect by that, and that's usually the roadways and where two rivers come together is where a town is. And so my anti-nuclear work has gone back to like, oh no, if Hanford goes gush, it's going to go, and when it goes gush, when it releases radioactivity, it will go into the Columbia River 10 miles upstream of the Tri-Cities of Pasco, Kennewick, and Richland. And in Richland, they get $2 billion a year to try to clean up the nuclear waste since the 80s. And so most of the money in that town has come from our federal taxes to try to clean up. And they have admitted in their presentations at public hearings that it's the country's most difficult engineering task is to stop the leakage of the nuclear waste that they quickly randomly dumped into unlined pits and trenches. They had experiments going on trying to develop they made plutonium there for all the nuclear missiles of the Cold War that got going in the years after the first ones were being made of the Manhattan Project in the 40s. And so it's been back then and since then, it was until it got shut down the end of the 80s. But particularly in the Cold War time, they were in this desperate, pathetically desperate attempt to make a lot of plutonium to outdo the Soviets in what they thought the Soviets had advanced, you know, spy versus spy. Someone said the Soviets got this one figured out, so then they had to develop a different type of a bomb to be bigger and more powerful than the Soviets. And thank God Gorbachev just called a halt to it, and it was perestroika and the end of the Soviet Union. And he said, we can't keep going like this. So his wisdom, I think, brought it to an end. But anyways, back then they were quickly making this plutonium and quickly experimenting with new things in the 300 area in the middle of it's a loop, kind of a bend in the river, encloses the Hanford thing, and they had 7 nuclear reactors along the river using the water directly running right through the reactors to cool it without a secondary cooling system.
How long did they do that?
I think 20 years. And it polluted the water. It made it radioactive. There was a worker who was stopped back then, just speaking of the watershed. So the Columbia goes past 10 miles down from this dreadful thing. It goes past the Tri-Cities of 250,000 people live in those three cities. And then it winds its way down past Hood River to past Portland, Oregon, another 250,000 in the town of there. And also along the way, agricultural products are produced. Apples and fruits along the Columbia River are irrigated with water from the Columbia River. Sometimes, luckily, people take it in Hood River. You can't be sure because there's the Hood River that comes down into the city of Hood River, and they are smarter, and they take out of the Hood River. And a big river like the Columbia has smaller rivers coming into it that have the chance of being cleaner if they don't have the liquid nuclear waste in them. Well, now it's nuclear waste that's going into the river. Back then, it was the nuclear reactor's cooling system. There was a worker back in the 60s who his radiation badge marked too high at the end of a day of work, and the Geiger countered him and figured out it was coming from his stomach, and they asked what he ate for the day, and he ate clams from a can from the bottom, from Astoria, clams that had come from Astoria. That Astoria is the last town on the Columbia River as it heads out to the ocean. And in the estuary there, the clams were radioactive. They had caught that the stuff from Hanford, wow, hundreds of miles downriver. But he's the only one who wears a radiation badge in the area because he worked at Hanford. And there were no other facilities that were radioactive, and people weren't doing things like with materials besides Hanford in the area. So that speaks that the entire river for 20 years at least was radioactive, and small algae and bacteria and stuff will take on this, and then the bigger things eat them, and a food chain has it be that the big fish like salmon, famous salmon fishing, and the people love to go for the dinosaur fish, the sturgeon, in the Columbia River because there's 100-year-old fish and they feel like they have, you know, it's like big game hunting or something. Such an experience. And sturgeon are literally a type of fish that was around with funny shapes and gills and different things that since the dinosaur days. But any individual huge sturgeon could be 100 to 200 years old. I think 200, but I know at least 100 years old. So it eats the smaller fish. And many of these radioactive, the sludge and different things that are radioactive pollutions get lodged in a fish's fat and in a fish's body, and it bioaccumulates. If a little teeny thing got it in it, it doesn't get flushed out of it. And when a bigger fish eats that, it doesn't get flushed out. It stays like a savings account in this fish's body. And so the biggest fish has the most radiation in it. And people, and like I heard from Jerry Paulette, a wonderful activist of our area who's now in the House of Reps for Washington State. He always went to the public hearings about Hanford with his group that he started and was fantastic, Heart of America Northwest. And he would give wonderful introductions for about a half an hour before the hearing started for anybody who wanted to come get more information on what that was about, which was, and then he would get people to come to it too, because we'd know what it was about and be enraged about.
When was this? When did he do that, Louisa?
I would say this was about 7 years ago, maybe, that Jerry Paulette, let's see, what was I going to tell you? Oh, yeah. When I heard that the native tribes, of which there's about five of them in the Columbia Plateau, in the Columbia Basin, within 100 miles of Hanford, where things went into the air and came down. That's what I'm trying to get to, is that for a while I was concerned with what was oozed out in liquid form into the Columbia River. And then I heard about releases that went into the air and came down, sometimes in particulate matter and other times in like radioactive iodine gas, that would go into the air and come down with the rain, precipitation, or if they were in any way with a good weight to it, it would come down sooner. Like if it, oops, there's my dog. I better go somewhere else. it would be a particulate matter, and that would drop close to the plant or the release place, so anything heavy drops close. So Fukushima had particles of cement and all the containment building. So will the Columbia Generating Station if it has a problem with its cooling system, and the pipes break, and then well, the way Fukushima worked was it had a meltdown, and when it has a meltdown, the gases rise up that are explosive hydrogen gas up into the dome of the containment building that's meant to hold everything in, but by mistake, as it's turned out, because we're very new at this, it's only been, you know, like since the Manhattan Project that we've been doing this foolishness, that was the 40s, and so the gases rise, and like Three Mile Island, it almost blew up. But all you need is a spark of some sort, like a piece of metal from the earthquake shaking, falling a pipe, knocking another pipe. That makes a spark. That explodes the hydrogen gas in the top of it like a hydrogen bomb. And it blew it sky high at Fukushima. And it would have done it at Chernobyl and totally dosed New York City and Washington, D.C. and the whole megalopolis, because the winds blow east predominantly. But the winds don't always blow east. And that's why I'm scared about the Columbia Generating Station. But we don't have, you know, like people could say, well, who cares if the water of the, you know, like how will that be dangerous for Portland if the water flows in the Columbia past Portland? Most people don't even go down to the Columbia River in Portland for anything. They cross over to Vancouver on a bridge, and nobody sticks their feet in there. Some people play around in there and go water skiing. I've seen a lot of that in the area. But windsurfers love the wind that usually is blowing up the Columbia River from the west, from the ocean, and it funnels it into through the Columbia Gorge, and it usually blows at a high speed because of the Venturi effect of funneling it, and it goes fast to the east, away from Portland towards Hanford.
Well, if something happens at the Columbia Generating Station, like a real earthquake that melts down Columbia Generating Station, we've got more of things to worry about than that, because nobody could get into Hanford to maintain those sites that need to be maintained 24 hours a day. It could be a true... This could really literally, if anything were to happen to Columbia Gen, that's why it's completely insane for them to continue operating it. It needs to be shut down permanently, because we know there's going to be an earthquake there. It needs to be in shutdown mode when the earthquake happens so that it doesn't cause a catastrophe at Hanford.
Exactly. And they shut it every year to refuel it at least once. And according to the economic analysis book, which a friend had given to me, that was created through Physicians for Social Responsibility, I think organized the sponsorship of an economist to analyze the smarts of keeping the Columbia Generating Station going as a electricity generating power plant for the Northwest. And it's a boondoggle. It's a waste of money. It doesn't, it shuts itself down with the scram thing. And people have to figure out, why did it do it this time? And right. They're so used to it that it's scary because they're so used to it breaking. And we just have lucked out. It's only by luck. It's like a toss of the dice that we have not had the same type of nuclear accident. And what I wanted to say was, throughout this research, I've been trying to figure out the predominant winds, because I used to be scared of what oozed into the water and went into the fish and people eat it. And what Jerry Paulette had said was that 80% of the tribes around there still get, or 80% of their pollution, of their protein, is still from the salmon from the Columbia River. And they have a high rate of leukemia, a high rate of lots of the cancers expected from radioactive sickness. But what I now want to return to is the wind, because for a while after I was like agreeing with people that even though on a map you can see that it goes, the river goes down through Portland, it will probably keep on shooting down and then it'll go to the sea. And then we're going to see all the sea problems because it's going to just keep going. And yes, all the fish of the Columbia River are going to be killed probably. From the Hanford down. But besides that most people won't notice, because they're busy selling insurance or something, the winds can carry those particles, from an exploded, cement, containment cap building dome that's over, it's actually a square building, the Columbia Generating Station. It's not a dome, not the iconic thing. It doesn't even look like a nuke. But anyways, it will drop down in the area on the dirt and on all those fields. So when you go to drink your Washington State wines that say from the Yakima Valley, that's like 20 miles from Hanford. The Walla Walla wines, there's wine ridges and clusters of wine, and it's beautiful and fun around there for people to bicycle. They have all these bed and breakfasts. It's a big thing to go to the wine countries of that area, and people don't bring up that Hanford's over there in the middle of the whole thing, only like an hour away. But also they'll say, well, that's the problem is nuclear waste. Like, what is it? There's 56 billion gallons of nuclear waste and at Hanford. Anyways, when they did it, the green run, which people, you've probably talked about that online, I guess. Or on your show, when they did an experiment to test the new Geiger counters that the government had wanted to see if they worked. And so quietly, silently, in the 80s, I forget what year it was. That's not very good. Or what it was in the 80s, it got exposed. So I'm not doing very good about this. Oh, I know. I have a friend with cancer. I grew up in Spokane.
I have the green run.
Yeah.
Google it so we can get
we'll
the,
just say yeah. They did this somewhere. It was maybe the 70s, 60s.
1949. It was 1949. The 1949 radiation experiment that contaminated Washington. It's called the Green Run.
This is what happened. The winds blew from, they blew northeast that day. And what they did was they released some strong radioactive iodine gas that they were going to monitor, and they had already set up monitor things of these new meters all around the Columbia Basin.
They released 5,000 to 12,000 curies of iodine-131 and even a greater amount of xenon-133. Says the radiation
while people were happy and quiet and patriotic.
Distributed and, over a populated area and caused the cessation of intentional radioactive releases until 1962. So this is, they tracked people when more experiments commenced. Wow.
Yep. And there's the group called the Downwinders. 4,000 people are suing for the thyroid cancer they got from that little experiment by the government. And that was, you know, makes you not trust the government when you know they do things like that.
Well, it's like this. The first thing that you wanted to talk about was the Fernald uranium processing plant in Ohio, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what they did was that
uranium has got to be stopped.
That's right. What? They have the uranium. They took the uranium out of there because it was making people sick at this place. And what they did was they cleaned it up, and now they call it the Fernald Reserve, where people go hiking. You're not supposed to eat there, but people are, kids, they take the children there for a yearly thing. The schools go there.
That old New York Times article, it's shocking when you hear how much mess there was. And various managers, even an ex and retired manager said, I told you this 20 years ago.
1988.
You should have done something.
That's right. 1988.
I told you about the leak. I told you
US
about this.
For decades let
that.
Uranium leak at the weapon plant. The government officials overseeing a nuclear plant in Ohio knew for decades that it was releasing thousands of tons of radioactive uranium waste into the environment, exposing thousands of workers and residents in the region, a congressional panel said today. The government decided not to spend the money to clean up three major sources of contamination. Runoff from the plant carried tons of the waste into the drinking water in the area, and the Great Miami River leaks pits the plant storage waste containing uranium emissions and other radioactive materials and supplies.
It's right near, by the way, right near Cincinnati.
Right next to Cincinnati. Right next to it. So this is the thing. This is a clear pattern of abuse with uranium toxic poisoning from the government. They basically... It's what they're doing up in Hanford. It's what they're doing at every nuclear facility. It's what they're doing at Fukushima. They're just ignoring the cost to human health. They don't care.
To pound it home, just one little point on this whole little, this is, that was good that you read that. And we're seeing this repeated thing. But people should not say in Portland, oh, we're in a good one place to be because the winds blow so strong up the Columbia River. Because about 5% of the time, and I've been living in Portland also with my grandkids the last year or two, every like once a month or so, the winds will come down the Columbia River. It depends, and I heard from a firefighter who was the captain of the owner of a forest firefighting crew, that he fears for his, he takes care of his workers, and he doesn't want to put them in harm's way, and if possible, even though it's a dangerous job. And so he has to make sure the winds are not going to blow down on his workers out there putting out forest fires and grass fires and stuff. Sometimes it's sage fires that are ridiculous. And so he has been tracking. He lives out in Grand Ronde out there, about an hour away from Hanford. But in the Nez Perce country to the north, to the southeast of Hanford. Anyways, he noticed that when in Indonesia, there is a certain kind of a wave of a storm of the cold and warm. 2 weeks later, it will have turned into a reversal, if it's in the summertime, a reversal of the spiral of the winds. You know, like the northern hemisphere, there's a counterclockwise spiral to most of the storms, and southern hemisphere the opposite direction. And Einstein figured that out looking at his coffee one day, it was spiraling. And it happens. It's just a thing of our planet, like magnetism or something. It happens in the drains. It happens in the sky, too. And so it reverses according to this guy, and he has an app on his phone to show him the weather of the world and the certain low pressure, high pressure things. And he knows how to look at that so that he knows that if there's a forest fire that happens in the next time in the Pacific Northwest, then he will know that the winds will blow from Hanford towards Portland. And that's the point I was trying to get to. They will blow down the Columbia River. And I, in this year or so that I've been living up in Portland, have noticed that it's kind of scary once in a while. I can tell the winds are coming from the northeast directly towards Portland from Hanford. So if the Columbia Generating Station gets shook up and has broken in an earthquake, where they have small ones all the time, but now we're learning that there could be a really big honker that is from this 10 miles underground big thing. That's Sandy Doten's article in the Seattle Times about 5 years ago. Exposed that of new magnetic resonance geography, geology, plate tectonics. No, not plate tectonics. Yeah, it's partially. Anyways, you can see the earthquake faults in a different way by magnetism that is now able to be sensed from sky photographs from airplanes. And so they've been recharting the earthquake fault lines of our country now that they have this new technology. And it should be recognized by our government now that we have this new info. But they cruise on the old stuff, and they don't necessarily quickly jump and make changes now that we know this, even though the citizens say, now that you know there's this big honking earthquake fault line underneath Hanford, will you please shut down the Columbia Generating Station, which is at Hanford, if everybody didn't know that. And it's one of the old reactors that they had of the seven. So the dust that is now part of my watershed fear, because now I'm into an airshed fear, and that it's not just what is in the big channel of the Columbia River. It's the Pacific Northwest. It's so who is in the wind flow? So if you want to look at what would typically happen, like 95% of the time, the winds blow towards the east. Sorry, I better go outside. My dog has found something. So the winds will go to the east. And within it, if it's a average-sized wind, within an hour it will hit Walla Walla, Washington, where so much food comes from there, too, and wines. And there's three colleges, and it's wonderful people out there. I like it a lot. It's a really cool little town, and it's sad to hear that it's such a dangerous place to live, that it's downwind of Hanford. And when you hear about their green run and stuff, you figure that whole area has been dosed with things that the government, you know, released from Hanford over all this time, and it lands on the dirt, and the dirt that's there up to let's see, the other college town, Moscow, Idaho, and then Ellensburg is to the east side or to the west side of Hanford, so. Normally, Ellensburg wouldn't get dosed, but 5% of the time, it's the same distance as Walla Walla is to the east. So Walla Walla, with all their colleges, and I'd say every time I talk to students in Walla Walla, they don't know anything about Hanford and the dangers of it being near them, and also and the Columbia Generating Station. And Ellensburg, they certainly don't know, because they have a lot of government contracts to do studies and to train people to work at Hanford still. And so they have a program of non-information. Seems like I'll go hang out in the library and use the facilities at Ellensburg. So there's universities and stuff all around there, which is the great hope that there's intelligent people who could be activists who could actually shut down the Columbia Generating Station.
I think there has to be something, though, Lou. Don't you think there's something? I mean, the Columbia Generating Station sits on the Hanford site. Sits on the Hanford site, less than 15 miles away. It's about 10 and a half miles away, right? We know now that it is sitting on top of 14 active nuclear earthquake faults. We know now that it's $500 million losing money, $500 million a year.
And $2 billion a year is used to clean it up.
Right. So why do we keep the Columbia? There has to be some reason that they're keeping the Columbia Generating Station open because, I mean, in my view, the United States government...
That is a mystery.
It is. And there has to be some reason that there's some piece of the pie that we're not seeing here because if this was under normal circumstances, they would close it down or they would move it. But they're hearing none of it. And the reality is it's almost as if the American government says... Okay, America, your new reality is everybody's going to have autoimmune disease problems. You're going to all get cancer. Your children are going to be autistic. You're going to die young. We're going to have high levels of sterility so that we can continue with our nuclear experimentation.
Yeah,
because that's essentially what they've done. In every single facility out there in Ohio, near Ohio, there's been 1,000 workers having to fight for their rights. I mean, I interview activists from every part of the country where it's the same story over and over and over again, where they have the government and the nuclear power plants have no regard. It really is their fundamental underlying message is, yes, we know you're going to get cancer. We know you're going to have grotesque diseases. We know you're going to suffer immeasurably. We know your family's going to go broke. We know all of that, but it's too bad, Dad. This is what we're going to do.
Yep. Well, I can't answer it. I've been trying to figure it out. And something makes me say, well, they're trying to keep a nuclear reactor going so we don't say we have totally ended commercial electric generation from nuclear in the Northwest. But, you know, there's 3 active nukes going on in Idaho Falls, Idaho, right now at the INEAL. So they're on as well. But we aren't allowed to really talk about that because that's a military operation. So we're not supposed to be upset about that. But I am, because that also flows into the Columbia River, down the Snake, through...
What do you mean in Ohio? In Idaho, what's going on in Idaho?
Idaho, the Idaho National... It's been called many things. INEAL is Idaho... used to be run by the Navy to train and develop nuclear reactors that they use in their submarines, which are... nuclear sub-base is in... Bremerton, Washington, across Puget Sound from Seattle, just west of Seattle. So, and the Seattle Fault is now going to be bigger in Seattle than the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. It is going to be huge, and it's going to make a tsunami within like 5 minutes or something hit the nuclear sub base in Bremerton, which is right across from Seattle. But my son feels that the nuclear subs are like one of the safest things, and they'll just be sloshed about, and they were created to be durable in undersea. And so when the tsunami comes, they are going to be one of the best places to put your nuclear reaction when it's going on. But at any rate, every nuclear reactor in our country has no place to put its waste, and every year they refuel all these nuclear reactors, and the waste that's only really half cooled down or half used up or something, but it's become dirty, and it's inefficient to use it, and so they have to store it on site till they find a place to do it. The waste isolation pilot plant, the WIP site in Carlsbad, New Mexico, when I was in my 20s and I was living in Albuquerque, I was doing artwork for, we didn't have computers then, and I would do handmade artworks for the television shows to tell the people about that it should not be, it was a test waste isolation pilot plant. It was a test facility to see whether they wanted to do it, and it should have not been used, but it is still being used. And there's a lot of waste being put in these salt beds, but it was proven back then that it was not a safe place to put it. Water would travel to Mexico underground to a village in Mexico. It turned up this guy. At any rate, so the Columbia Generating Station can, I think that they are trying to not have a cap on it. Oh, well, getting back to not the Columbia Generating Station, but INEAL, the Navy, in Idaho, yeah. The top end of it, probably an hour's drive. I go out there for various things like Yellowstone, an hour's drive away from Idaho Falls. We'll get you to the beautiful, incredible Teton Mountains. And on the north end of the Teton Park, like directly downwind of those three nukes is the Tetons. And right just northeast, which many times the winds blow northeast because they've come whipping around the bottom of Idaho and they're trying to get through the Rocky Mountains at that point. That's the edge of the Rocky Mountains, and they've gone under the Sawtooth Mountains and the Garnet Mountains, and they're trying to get across the Rocky Mountains. And so they go towards Yellowstone to go down the Missouri River way to get, just like we, the pioneers and stuff, came out that way because there was a gap and a lower area to come on up the Missouri River. Well, the winds will blow that way right over Yellowstone. But then who hasn't heard that Yellowstone is bulging? And it's going to be the largest volcanic eruption, and it's going to make huge earthquakes, and it's going to blow sky high. And that's only a short distance from three operating nuclear power plants at the what was once the Navy nuclear research and training place. To
so have they have operating nuclear power facilities.
They do.
I know that's the issue.
They've had various numbers of them at any time because wow. it's now our country's place to experiment and do different projects, like the modular reactors created there.
Lou, are they kind of new reactors that are like at Oregon State University that they say doesn't have any nuclear fuel in it, or are they real nuclear facilities?
They are. Some of them are real nukes, and I think we need to investigate that one more because I've been there trying to see it, but in no way do they want any public to come because they call it, you know, it's a military installation. It's a Navy. It used to be military. Now they.
What's really bizarre about it all, Lisa, when you look at their website, it looks really, really slick. It looks like, you know, they're talking about nuclear fuel, nuclear future. It's this idea.
Solar energy there. So they make it, they greenwash it.
They actually do not care about
research.
Human life. There's no discussion anywhere on any of these nuclear pages about how they're managing the harm to human health. It's all about developing energy, all of it.
Right, for energy independence, and they also are greenwashing it with doing renewable energy research and solar energy and interesting things. So there's actually people who work there on good projects that I want them to do on solar energy. And that way we don't pay attention to the other things that they're doing. But I don't know any other parts of the country where they're doing this kind of research, and I think it is now our preeminent nuclear research facility. So if you look at the history of Hanford, those places are scary because they don't know what they're doing and they're experimenting. And the middle of Hanford, they let these scientists do these experiments, and whatever was the waste, they just dumped it in unlined pits right there in the center of the Hanford kind of curve of the river. The bend of the river is where they did the experimenting. Now they're moving all the nuclear waste and building the tanks and stuff there to try to have it be on site and away from the river because the tanks have been leaking. You know, Hanford, you've probably talked all about that, about the poorly built tanks that they put the nuclear waste in such a hurry, and they always proclaim because we didn't have enough money, and that's supposed to let them off the hook because we're economically based, profit based capitalist country. So that's American, is to say that, well, they had budget restraints so they couldn't make two tanks. They had to do single line tanks and single walled tanks and stuff, and I don't remember right now what the percentages of the tanks that did bust open and leak, but I think it was like a quarter of them. And and they've been trying to figure out how to put them into other tanks and other things to stabilize it. And after 20 years of trying to make the vitrification plant to melt glass and mix in the uranium waste into it. They said it didn't work and it's not going to work. And they might throw out that whole idea of the way to do it. And all they had for the country to figure it out was counting on that at Hanford, that they'd figure out the vitrification plant, because there's no place to put this waste in the country. So, and what I was also saying is, if you see that a nuke was shut down or a nuke was operating, a nuclear reactor was operating anywhere in the country, at a certain point, they just left it there. For a while, they would slip the things into government facilities that were military-based, which Hanford was to start with, and pretty much was totally, and to make nuclear bombs for our military. You could be scared of military facilities because they bring in these toxic materials and the public's not allowed to find out, because then it'd be spying on military operations. And so we are discouraged from inquiring, and we're basically told we have no right to discuss it. Yet, ecologically, it could kill us. It could affect us terribly. So there's this disconnect about that.
There's a lot of disconnects. And that's the thing with the nuclear industries. There's this whole thing is a disconnect. They do these experiments. They say, well, like the green one, let's experiment. Let's release a lot of this radioactive and see what happens to the people. Then when the people start dying, they're like, oh, well, we didn't really mean to do that. And it's like the lying about the cost to human health.
And besides that, they say whatever they want. And they let the people die because they keep the litigation going. They say, you can't prove we did that. You can't prove that was us. Your cancer, you're not going to make us pay for that. And tax dollars go to pay for your family support, because dad, the money earner of the family, has been sick for 20 years, dying of this radiation problem. And you can't say it was us that did it. But luckily, also, the modern things like Fukushima, I noticed that they are much quicker to say that they see some kind of a radioactive tag that identifies where that radioactive material came from, that there's very much more specific types of radiation that you can identify. Oh, yeah, that's from Fukushima. No, that one's not. That's from Hanford. Oh, that's from here, there. And depending on the process, like when the meltdown actually happened, because of the materials that was released into the ocean, various other scientists could tell that the meltdown had happened. That's how they can tell, because it changes in what it spits out. And once it does that, that means the reaction has gotten to a certain level, and then that new material is coming out that can be found on fancy Geiger counters and stuff.
That's only certain isotopes, like plutonium. They don't even test for. They don't test for plutonium at all, because they can't tell where it's from. Literally, they don't test for it because they can't tell if it's from the World War II type of bombings, or if it's from Fukushima, or from Hanford, or wherever it's at. They can't tell. So that's why they don't test for it. So there's no signature to a lot of it. So, but this the point is here
you
for
do,
me.
You probably already talked about this, Lonnie, but the Columbia Generating Station, just like 10 years ago, or this is what Heart of America released, so you can find it in their information. They joined in with people to prevent, with some other groups, I think Sierra Club and stuff, to prevent the Columbia Generating Station in the Tri-Cities from using plutonium waste from the bomb making, which does sound like a smart idea to make good use of this stuff when we say we don't want to bomb the whole world with anger, so let's use it for making electricity for the home refrigerator. So they were slipping it into there, but Jerry Paulette caught them at that, or Heart of America and a few others realized that they were in some technical, big, huge book that they were, it was discovered that they were planning to use plutonium. If there was an accident in that faulty nuclear power plant of the Columbia Generating Station, like Fukushima, it would they would have the nuclear waste stored above the reactor, and it would have blown it all sky high, and the nuclear reactor core in the meltdown drops down, the water pours over it, and any one particle of plutonium will keep going for a long time. Anything it touches, it kills. It just as you're a dead duck if you touch plutonium. You're everything, you know, and it'll never stop. It's so strong. Well, it will stop because it's that radioactive. It has a shorter half-life than the things that are just murmuring in a low-level radiation and releasing the radioactivity.
Plutonium's half-life is 24,500 years.
Yeah, that's so much less than the depleted uranium, which is in the millions, 250 million for one kind of depleted uranium. And then
you're kidding.
Billion for the type where they've taken out most of the radioactivity and they just use it for a heavy metal. A strong,
so the half-life of depleted uranium is far longer than plutonium?
Yes,
Wow. Because
the reason plutonium can hurt us so much is it's shooting out these little electron things, and that's what damages our, you know, it's the energy is being released very fast from the plutonium, and so, yeah, we only have to worry about 150,000 years or whatever you just said.
I feel comforted.
That's really a lot less than the millions and billions of years that they talk about the other ones. And now we're learning about the low levels of radiation do a different kind of a damage and a continuous damage. And that's very bad, too. But it's different kinds of damage if you get low-level radiation versus being burned by plutonium and killed straight up. Yeah.
So, Lou, you've talked to a lot of these people. I know you're all over the Northwest, and you're going into these facilities and talking to them.
I go talk to the people in the grocery stores and stuff.
Right.
I haven't talked to scientists.
But there's no acknowledgement about the harm that the nuclear pollution causes to human health in these communities. Like at Richland and Walla Walla, they're just like, yeah, it's no problem. They feel 100% safe living there. I spoke to a family who lived in Walla Walla. And they're like, no, we're safe. We're far enough away that we're not in any danger. I just kind of shook my head and thought, because this is the thing, as adults, they might be well until their 40s and 50s, and their children might be well until they're in their 20s and 30s. But again, people are accepting catastrophic damage to their bodies as just part of living in the modern world. Like, we just have to accept that our kids might get cancer, they're going to have autoimmune diseases, they might get brain cancer, thyroid cancer. That's just part of the program, and everybody's got it.
Yeah, you wondered, did our great-grandparents get cancer so much?
No, they did not.
Get it and they didn't have a name for it?
No, they did not have these catastrophic diseases. There's been lots of studies like that. All these diseases popped up when the technology started popping up. And it's not just nuclear. I mean, these things are also caused.
No.
You know, in the nuclear process, there's a lot of horrible chemicals that are needed to be used that are also highly toxic.
Yeah. And certainly everything, you know, they take something off the market 5 years after they've beta tested it on the market on people. You know, they'll take an herbicide, pesticide, da da da. You know, they'll say these herbicides are safe for people and animals. They're meant to kill weeds. Oh, good, weed killers. But now,
so Lou, I have
to
cut you off. We have 30 seconds left. This has been really fabulous. I hope you come back and join us again. You've been listening to Louisa Hamacek. I think you can reach her at louisa@ecoarts.gmail. ecoarts@gmail.
louisa.ecoarts@gmail.
So thank you for joining us, you guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Put your courage feet on. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you later.
Yeah.
Bye, Lou.
All right.